sorry. Who the fuck just turned on a Nokia 3200? What the fuck was that?
I literally have just got a flashback. 3.
I don't know why you turned off and on. It must have died
fucking
or something.
3210 back in the village. What the fuck were you about?
It's the sound that I associate with, you know, the game Snake. Because that's all I used to play, like, when Marada had that kind of phone.
Oh, Snake was so good.
Or then you could get, like, your wallpapers, and you could get, like, a little pixelized rose, and it was just, like, shitty background, and then the jet black rose.
What was it called? The something razor.
Oh, Motorola.
And
we all like the razor.
We did.
Yeah. And then I got another one after that, and for the life of me, I can't fucking remember what the model of the phone was, but it was, like, this shiny, almost pearlescent purple fucking flip phone. And it had, like, a circle thing where you could see the time at the front of it.
It was surrounded
by diamonds. Yes! What was that phone?
What was that fucking phone? Like, it came with, like, little diamante things that you could put around. It literally had, like, it had an aerial on it. Like, the little tiny aerial. Yeah! Oh, my God.
And you had the little danglies.
I remember I used to draw stuff with, like, the little the little paint option on the LG cookie and set it as my wallpaper. And I was like, I'm so artistic.
Like, one of the girls in primary school, I can't remember, was it, like, her parents were kind of strict, or was it that she'd had a phone and she broke it and they were like, this is what you're getting kind of thing.
Right.
But in sixth class, she had a fucking, you know, the car phones. As in, it was, we called it the brick. It was it was one of those, and it was this length of nearly a ruler, maybe 20 centimeters long, and it was like 3 inches thick and about 4 inches wide. Oh my holy God, she brought it, and we were like, it was amazing. It was a car phone that they used to have back in the day. It was like wireless or whatever, but she like really tried to bedazzle it and everything. She bought, like, you know, those sheets of like diamante. But there was just so much space to cover.
I'm not surprised. So the oven has a surface area the same size as a normal fucking laptop, like, the stage.
Honestly,
it was huge. Now, we used to call it the brick because it was that big. Like, it was the size of one of those red bricks. Like, it was humongous. It was hilarious.
I'm just imagining, like, an 80s dude in an oversized sports coat rolled up at the shoulder or at the elbows walking around with that phone. Like, that's all I see the whole time you're talking.
It was humongous, and it was silly. And it had a really, like, you know, all our areas were like maybe an inch long. This one was like
the one that you had, like, proper
was
had
one
to
of those
extend.
Really long ones, like a television area. It was so funny.
We just called it the China phone because we ordered it from China, and it was the same. It flipped up. It slid up. It was a slidey one, not a flippy. But it was like that thick. But it had like a proper camera on the back of it, like the camera came out the way fucking digital cameras do, and then it had a huge aerial, and you could watch TV on it when, like, back in the day when fucking bunny ears were still a thing. So, like, it was the craziest phone I've ever owned. It was fucking class.
I'm actually baffled. Like, that sounds like something you'd make now as a bit of, the way, like, to have, like, the new record players and the Polaroid cameras, like, something like modern, but like throwback. That's what it sounds like.
Exactly, and you could, like, use it as a radio as well, with the antenna. You just kind of pop down and there you go. It was the best thing ever. It broke very quickly.
Like, not surprised, but, like, I had that much stuff that I was able to do.
Fully recommend, if we ever time travel, go back in the day to my house when I had all these weird phones and just take them forward with us. Or then I had the MSN phone as well. Did you ever have an MSN phone?
No.
Man. No, I was never on MSN or Bebo or anything.
You weren't on Bebo.
What? How? What?
Yeah, it's a whole trauma thing.
Like, you just never, like, got to experience
allowed,
like, your other
I
half.
Wasn't allowed on, like, Facebook or nothing until I was, like, I don't know, 13 or 14.
Oh,
like,
my God. That is so sad for you.
I remember one of the, like, the same girl with the brick, she made me a Bebo. Because everyone had one, like.
Yeah.
And she made one for me. I kind of let it slip to Mam, basically. I can't remember if I told her and she flipped or if I let it slip by accident. But she was like, okay, log in and let's see what the story is. Like, what have you posted? And I was like, I haven't even been on it. Like, I hadn't even been on it. I had to ring your one up and be like, what's the password for my Bebo?
Oh,
yeah.
Right, so I guess I still sort of have some sort of a job as a host this week, but not a whole lot, so that's great. So, Cuiva's going to start off our story. for today. We're doing another heavy hitter episode, but this one, one's strong. This one we don't think we're going to get many laughs out of, but we're going to, like, we'll try. But there's not going to be a lot to take the piss out of, but we'll do our best.
I'll do my utmost best.
It's absolutely so grim. Like,
yeah. I won't mention what it is. I'm going to let you just get straight into it, so let's dive in.
Splash. Sorry. Okay, so we're doing the case of the guy. Oh, fuck's sake. We're doing the case of the person. Oh my god.
Just call him what he is.
Say Dean Corr, the Candyman Killer. That's all we're doing to say.
We're doing the case of the guy who did some stuff.
Some bad things. Yes.
And that's all we're telling you. Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Don't look it up. He's a bad guy. PSA. Yeah. So Dean Corll, known as the Candyman Killer. This guy was born in Fort Wayne in Indiana on December 24th, 1939. So Christmas Eve, basically. Which...
How could he be born in such a magical time and be such a cunt?
Because he's the Antichrist. It makes sense.
Ew. Ha-ha. I was just about to say he's the same birthday as Louis Tomlinson. And I was like, then you said that. And I was like, never mind. Okay. So he was the oldest son of Mary Emma Robinson and Arnold Edwin Corll. He had a younger brother, Stanley, who was about 3 years younger than him. Kind of hard to figure out dates and stuff because his birthday was so at the end of the year that it was like, it was adding on an extra year to the age difference and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. When it wasn't really. So he was 2 or 3 years younger than Dean. Arnold, the dad, was said to have been very strict with his kids that he apparently just didn't appreciate children. He was said, like, that's what was said, that he didn't appreciate children. And, you know, the fact that kids are kids.
And they suck. And
if you don't like kids, don't have kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Like, nobody likes lots of noise. But, like, if you're going to have kids, you have to accept the fact that they're going to be noisy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like getting a cat and being like, oh my god, my furniture's all scratched up. And it's like, that's what happens. Anyways. So, Arnold was apparently very strict. And Mary was apparently very protective over two boys. So, they used to argue a lot. Not just over the two boys. They just didn't really get along. But that was part of...
Right,
their issues was that he was overly strict and she wanted him to be nicer to them because, you know, obviously.
Kids, yeah.
They ended up divorcing in 1946, 4 years after Stanley was born. So Dean was about 7. Arnold was drafted into the US Air Force in Memphis, Tennessee. So Mary moved with the two boys. She sold the family home and she moved with the two boys into a trailer home in Memphis. Because she wanted the boys to be close to their dad, which I thought was very sound, because a lot of people wouldn't do that.
Considering, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know they probably were on good terms or whatever, but, like, you know, she was really looking out for the two boys.
Yeah. She didn't want them to grow up without a father all the same.
Yeah, exactly. So, Dean, you know, was growing up. He was about 7 at this stage, and they said that he apparently was, like, a very shy and, like, serious child. Mm-hmm. He found it kind of hard to socialise with other kids. But at the same time, he said, like, people who knew him said that he seemed to have a lot of empathy and kind of worried about other people, that he, you know, would be concerned for people and, like, their well-being.
Strange.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, what the fuck?
Like, yeah, knowing so what he's done being... and then to show empathy as a child, but also be very, like, unsociable is, like...
Yeah, strange. Like, stuff kind of goes sideways in his life, which I feel like, well, it doesn't really, to be honest. Nothing fucking happens to him, but anyways, I pretend it doesn't.
Just using that.
Fuck's sake. Sorry, I don't know, I'm trying to make excuses for him, but yeah, like, nothing really went wrong for him. He was like a normal kid. He had empathy for others. Maybe he was faking, but people said probably. That they noticed that he had a normal amount of empathy for others, that he was concerned, you know, if someone fell, he'd be worried about them, kind of shit like that. But when he was a kid, he was 7, and he came down with a case of rheumatic fever. So I had to look this up, because obviously nobody knows what that is anymore.
No.
And apparently some people who get, you know, strep throat infection.
Yeah.
If that goes untreated, it can result in kids getting this rheumatic fever.
Right, okay.
It's mainly kids that get it, you know, kind of below the age of 12, above the age of 4. That's when kind of most people get it. But the symptoms of it are fever, joint pain, muscle twitches. Like, you'd be kind of moving, like, uncontrollably. Like, you wouldn't have control of all your muscles. And sometimes they'd come out in like a rash, but like not an itchy rash, you just, your skin would kind of
just inflame,
but it wouldn't be itchy or sore or anything. It would just, you know, kind of like the meningitis rash, that you wouldn't, it's just your skin looks discolored nearly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that word. But anyways, So they didn't realise that he'd had rheumatic fever. I'm presuming that he was probably just very sick with strep throat and they just thought that it was just an extension of that. So he went undiagnosed. And it wasn't until he was 11 that doctors actually found that he had a heart murmur in 1950. Because apparently this condition, this rheumatic fever, can damage the lining of your heart. Like it thickens the fibres or something.
Right.
Okay. I tried to look it up, but it was very kind of complicated language. But it basically thickens the... Anyways... heart murmur. This kind of drew attention to him because he ended up not being able to join in PE in school because he obviously had heart issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, this probably didn't make it any easier for him to make friends because he already found it hard to socialise and now he kind of stuck out a bit because he was the kid with a bad heart. You know, that kind of...
Yeah.
You know the way kids are, you know?
Yes.
So...
kids
can be little shit. Yeah. Savannah's like, yeah.
So, feeling personally anyways. Attacked at the moment. I'm like, when do I become a serial killer? But
throwback to when I thought I was going to become one.
I mean, there's still time.
That's actually true.
And you probably meet some of the criteria, so, you know.
Yeah.
Pissed any beds and lit any fires recently? No?
Not recently. Okay, so anyways, the same year that Dean came down with his heart murmur, that he was found to have the heart murmur, his parents remarried. So Mary and Arnold, they tried to get back together, tried to fix themselves, and got married again. And they ended up, when they married, they moved to Pasadena in Texas. But 3 years later, it fell apart again. So in 1953, they divorced for the second time. Yeah, see, I don't know, a lot of these cases are like, people try to remarry, and I'm like, if you divorce the first time, unless those issues are completely gone, you're going to divorce again. Like, there's no point. Like, if it's something you couldn't forgive at the start, like, if it's like, you wouldn't fucking do the dishes, and you were like, so fed up with it. I know that's a stupid reason, but like...
No, but I know what it is.
You know that if it's not something that he's changed or she's changed, then you're going to still fight and you're still going to break up again, so don't bother.
Exactly. And it's like, not trying to have just like, a father figure, because in the end it'd be more unhealthy for the kids just to see them fighting than like constantly breaking up, constantly getting back together. Like, it's just... I know, just
exactly.
See, I can imagine Mary probably was like, you know, the boys need their dad. And it's like, boys do need dads.
Yeah, but
like,
she doesn't everyone, have to be
you know, it's
him
good to
for
have
him
a father figure
them.
In your life. But you don't have to marry someone. And at the same time, I'd rather have my parents be separated than have them fighting all the time.
Exactly.
Because that just shows you that your relationship, like, relationships are fucked up. Anyways, we'll get into that. So anyways, Mary kept the two boys, but yet again, the marriage ended on good terms. So the three of them kept in contact with the dad. I don't know. I can't imagine what would have caused divorce twice.
Obviously, I'd say the same issue that the first one was over. Because I guarantee, like you said earlier on, if it's not fixed... it's going to happen again, so I'd imagine.
I was curious as to, I wonder what the reason was the fact that they were able to remain on good terms twice is just unusual, we'll say. I would consider it unusual anyways. But anyways, so the two of them broke up and Mary met this guy, Jake West, and he was a travelling clock salesman.
That sounds like a very fancy job.
Fabulous.
Anyways, this guy, I'm presuming he was a clock salesman, but he probably knew how to fix clocks, so he probably was like, double pammy.
I wonder, is that the equivalent of people like other women that used to go around selling stuff from Avon?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, just going around selling
It was the thing back then that people would go door to door selling like Hoovers and...
and magical hair growth potions and like, does your wife not love you anymore? Spray this on your dick, it'll work.
Oh my God. Okay. So she married this guy, Jake West, and when they got married, the four of them ended up moving up east along the Texas coast to a town called Vidor. And while they were there, about 2 years later, Joyce was born in 1955 and she was Dean's half-sister.
Right.
So, I don't know. What age is he now at this stage? I don't even know. 10. He's like 16 or something at this stage, I think. That's quick maths. I'm probably wrong. Anyways, Mary and Jake set up a small, like a candy company. They had met this pecan nut salesman.
so specific, yeah.
Right?
But is it pecan? Do you say pecan or...
No, I'd say pecan.
Pecan.
Pecan pie.
Yeah, you know, there's a big argument about it because some people say pecan.
Pecan. Yeah, I've seen pecan.
I can't even say, I don't even know how to say it because it sounds...
it's like you're saying pecan. It's like, what?
Pecan, pot.
See?
Oh my God. So anyways, Mary and Jake ran into this pecan nut salesman and he said that basically there was a niche in the market and they should take advantage of it. So the two of them set up a candy company. So they're making sweets and selling them.
Right.
So they set up this company and they started working out of their garage. You know, just trying to make like, it was kind of at the start, it was like a part-time job thing for them. But as it kind of grew, they you know, they all started working full time basically. From pretty much the beginning, Dean started helping to run the business. He worked constantly when he was when he wasn't in school, so on weekends and after school and before school, him and Stanley would work in the garage with the sweets.
Okay.
Their job was to keep the machines running, that, you know, the machines that would make the sweets. Also, they had to like pack up the sweets and stuff into little packages. So when when Jake was going out door to door on his sales trip, that he would, you know, that's how he would
sell them,
distribute them.
Yeah.
So they'd keep the machines going and they pack up the product. They give the product to Jake and then Jake would go door to door and sell them.
Okay. Basically.
Their main their main consumers of the product at the time was in Houston. So Jake used to regularly like travel to Houston to find customers or whatever. So in 1954, Dean enrolled in the Vedder High School. People who knew him at the time, like in school, said he was well behaved and like well rounded. He got, you know, like good to average grades. Like he wasn't anything special, but he got like above average, you know, that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They said that he was noted that he was a loner, that he was kind of a lot on his own a lot, but he did have a few girlfriends.
Do you know what it is? And I have a thing about it. Sorry for interrupting, but it's like, you know what's what, like a lot of serial killers, like they are very unsociable, but it's like other kids can sense that there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd say like the whole like, oh, he's very empathetic, like that's from him watching other kids. Like when he was a child, I'm like, that's a normal reaction. So I should do that when somebody falls. But I feel like other kids know. That's why none of them wanted anything to do with him.
Yeah.
When you're with someone, I'd say you would see like that kind of minute it takes them to realise I'm supposed to give a shit.
Do you know what I mean? It just strikes you as like, what?
Mm-hmm. Like, if I saw someone fall badly, if it was a normal fall, I'd probably just laugh. But if I saw someone fall and hurt themselves, I'd be like, you'd instantly be like, oh shit. I'd say he was probably like looking, and he'd have taken that second to be like, this is when I'm supposed to be like, oh shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, the kids would pick up on that and be like, they mightn't even know exactly what was wrong, but they'd probably notice that there's something weird.
You know? Something wasn't right with them, yeah.
So you remember, like, I'm sure you all remember, not that I'm, although we don't know, but not that I'm saying that we went to school with any serial killers or anything, but like, remember in school there was always at least one, and you'd look at them and just be like, there's something just not right about you. Like,
yeah,
I'm not playing with you, you're not coming near me, you're a little fucking weirdo. Like,
yeah, you actually get like unnerved in their presence, and like they mightn't have done anything at all, but there's just something in you that either like your back goes funny or you literally feel it in your spine that you're getting the creeps.
Exactly. You just nope out of there real hard. Like,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, the kids definitely knew. They knew what was coming.
I think kids pick up on a lot of things. They mightn't know what they're picking up on, but they just know what a normal reaction is.
Exactly.
Like, it's such a stupid example, right? But it's like when kids, like, know, like, they know something's wrong, and I'm not comparing kids to animals, but yes, I am. Like, cats, for example, don't know why people wear shoes, right? I went out the back the last day in my bare feet, and it was raining, and the cat, when I was coming in, she looked at my bare feet with disgust and looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing? Because she knew it was weird that I wasn't wearing shoes outside. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she doesn't know why she knows that it's weird. And I feel like kids are like that they know that something is off, but they don't know what.
See, I think at that age, you don't have, like, the emotional intelligence to be able to, like, properly figure out why they are as unnerved as they are. It's always, like, if you were to see somebody like that, like, at our age, you can tell clearly that behaviour is strange. But as a child or as, like, a young teenager, you're not going to... I'm not a fucking expert, but I don't think you'd have, like...
No, you're not going to sit there and think,
to be like,
hey, you know, this guy's going to turn out to be a huge ass serial killer. Like, that thought's never going to occur to you at like 8 years of age.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, something not right.
There's something.
Okay, so yeah, he had a couple of girlfriends, but he didn't really have many friends. But at the same time, I don't know if it was that he found it difficult to socialise or if he was one of those people who just didn't like other people. Do you know what I mean? Like, he had girlfriends maybe because he thought it was the normal thing.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And you'll like, always find a girl that'll be like, oh, he's so damaged, I love him.
I can fix him.
Yeah. Because we're stupid and we think we can fix everything.
You can fix anybody.
I can't even fix myself.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I feel like getting a girlfriend. Your own issues first. Getting a girlfriend is definitely easier as a teenager than actually making friends.
Especially in high school, because And it said that he had a few, like, you're only in high school for a few years. Like, you're only in high school for 3 or 4 years. 4 years? Like,
I don't know how the American system works.
I think it's 4 years. I think it's, like, I don't know. Anyways.
Besides the point.
Yeah, 4 years. But that's besides the point. I'm just saying that, like, he went through girlfriends in high school, which is, could kind of indicate something else. But anyways.
Like, unless they got spooked and was like, nope, he's weird. And then left. And then he had to find some more tragic young one.
Not that's even that, like, his wing. When I was a teenager and I had, like, boyfriends. They weren't boyfriends.
And they lasted, like a few hours.
Well, yeah, there was them. But, like, 1 month. 1 month maximum. Like, it was a month and then we'd break up. And, like, it'd be the stupidest reason we'd break up. It'd be like, oh, someone said that you were talking about me, so we're broken up now. And I'd be like, eh? Like, I haven't even left the house today. What do you mean? Like, that kind of shit.
Kind of
so,
talking shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, yeah, teenage relationships just didn't, like, last anyway, regardless of whether you weren't a psychopath or not.
That's true.
True.
Anyways, he was a loner, but he did have a few girlfriends, which to me kind of indicates that he was, I don't know what it indicates. Anyways, it doesn't really matter.
This is going great.
It could indicate anything. It could indicate that he just didn't like people and he just wanted girlfriends. While he was in school, his main interest, like, his main kind of hobby within the school was the brass band. He joined a brass band and he played trombone. That was it, basically. And in 1958, he graduated from high school. After he graduated, his family moved again to the northern outskirts of Houston because they figured, you know, that's closer. They're closer to where their customers are and it's less commuting for Jake to be going to sell sweets. You know, the logic made sense. So they opened up a little shop and they named it Pecan Prince because that was the name of their brand. They had set up a sweet candy company and called the company Pecan Prince. So they call the shop Pecan Prince.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of an unusual name, but that's fine.
Slagging people off for their business name. I don't think we can talk.
Honestly, we're literally called Cesspool.
I wouldn't, like, if they were selling nuts, I'd be like, fine, but they're selling sweets and they're just calling it pecan.
But it, I know, it's, I guess, of, it's because
it was
it
the pecan
started
guy.
With, yeah, it started with the candy pecans, yeah. So...
Sorry, I'm so judgy.
You focus on the weirdest points of every story.
Because like. I feel like those weird little things are like such, I don't know, they make everything add up.
I don't think
Pecan Prince has anything to do with it.
Like. Murdering this shit out of teenage boys.
Okay, spoiler alert.
Oh, as if that wasn't coming or evident.
Okay, in 1960, so 2 years after he graduated from high school, Mary, Dean's mam, asked him would he go live with his grandmother. Her husband had died and she was on her own and Mary basically just wanted someone to stay with the grandmother for a couple of years. That's fine.
Oh yeah, keep an eye on her.
Mm.
Yeah. So Dean went and while he was there, you know, obviously he had a social life while he was there. This is in Indiana, by the way. I feel like I didn't say that.
He went
to Indiana to his grandmother.
Okay.
And while he was there, he had a social life in Indiana and he made friends with this local girl. So they became very close and, you know, they were good friends. But the girl actually posed to him in 1962 and he said no.
Oh, unusual for a girl to at that time, yeah.
So, it might have been very, like, will you marry me? It would have been maybe a case of, like, I would like to marry you.
Like a little conversation, like...
Maybe it wasn't as forward as a proposal.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like, you're going to be my husband someday and he was like,
she asked him. But so yeah, he met this local girl, they were good friends. She asked him would he marry her and he said no. So pretty much kind of straight away after that he moved back to Houston, probably to avoid the girl because it was probably fucking messy, you know. He moved back to Houston to help with the family business. The business had, since he'd moved, it had relocated to Houston Heights, which was, it's now, I looked it up, is now kind of like affluent, I don't fucking know. It's like a fancy area at the minute.
Right.
But at the time, it was like a low-income area, so that it wasn't
very poor.
Yeah. So anyways, he moved to Houston Heights to the family business and ended up renting the apartment that was like above the shop. You know how some shops have like the apartment above upstairs? He ended up renting that and lived there.
Okay.
So Mary, in the meantime, after Dean came back a year later, she divorced Jake in 1963.
What did Jake do?
God knows. He sounds like a sound out.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
So maybe Mary's the problem then in all this. I'm just going to say
Very probable. Very probable.
It's probably just one of those things that's like, oh, the butterflies at the start are wonderful, but then it becomes like a real relationship where it's not like all fucking fairy tales and glitter. And then it's like, oh, well, this is boring now. On to the next one.
Yeah. Honeymoon phase wears off and she gets bored fairly quick.
So Mary at this stage now has had three divorces. So she's been married three times, twice to the same fella and obviously Jake now. So after she divorced him, he obviously kept Pecan Prince. So when she left him, she set up a new candy business on her own, which she named the Carl Candy Company. She gave Dean the job of vice president, and Stanley was given the role of secretary treasurer. So I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't even know what those jobs mean. Like, I know obviously what Stanley did, but I don't know what Dean as a vice president would have done. But anyway,
I feel like that's just a fancy dancy name to give to your son who likes to think he's more important than he actually is.
It is absolutely just an opinion. Honorary role. Like,
he probably was in charge of like hiring and firing. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe, yeah.
Looking up new ways to sell products and stuff. Like, but like, secretary treasurer
kind of
like
a neat name to give to somebody of it.
Yeah, it's like a fake name.
Like
it's
locally like, owned candy company. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very pretentious and like. I'm focusing on the wrong thing. Continue with the murder.
I'm rubbing off.
Pre-murder.
So, anyways, the reason she divorced Jake, this is why I don't have it written on my notes, is because when I was reading Savannah's notes that she sent me last night from the book that you were reading, I noticed something that wasn't mentioned in like the other articles, was that Jake apparently was the person who told Mary first that he thought that Dean was gay.
Right.
And she got very defensive because she was a massive fucking homophobe.
Okay.
And she broke up with him and moved to avoid the whole scandal.
Right, okay.
I completely forgot to write that down. I don't know why.
So actually was a cherub.
He could have been. Maybe he, I don't even think, because in the notes that I saw, it didn't say that he was like negative about it. He just said that there was.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. He's definitely a cherub, because I'd say he probably approached Mary in a like, now I just think poor Dean might like the boys. And then Mary, obviously on her religious high horse, like, no,
that is against God.
But maybe he was a dickhead about it, but at the same time, anyways, he basically told her, listen, I think there's speculations, like there was rumours kind of starting to circulate that there was little indicators that people thought he was gay.
That Dean was kissing boys.
I don't think he was kissing at this stage, but he was fancying them. So yeah, she set up the Coral Candy Company and she appointed Dean to vice president, and Stanley, the younger brother, was given secretary treasurer. So, whatever. But did Mary have a little young lad come up to her and make a complaint about Dean? He approached Mary, and he was an employee of the company.
Okay.
And he approached Mary, as obviously I'm presuming she was the president, and he came up and told her that Dean had been trying him, basically. He was making advances.
Right.
So Mary turned around and just fired him. She got rid of him. She told him to fuck off, basically. I don't even think she really explained to him why. I think she just dropped him. She said, I'm not dealing with this, basically. So that's lovely. She was a massive homophobe, and she regularly spoke about how she thought gay people were disgusting. And up until then, she'd never believed the rumours or speculations about Dean's sexuality.
Right.
Because, and I quote, he was loyal, obedient, helpful, loving, and a good, normal boy. And basically, she didn't believe it was possible until it was kind of confirmed by this young lad.
Okay.
And she fired him because she wanted to distance herself from, I'm presuming, what she felt was very shameful. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying,
you're trying to sweep it under the rug, like.
Because divorce is against the Bible as well. So, bit of a fucking hypocrite there, Mary, aren't you?
Thank you.
A massive hypocrite. She's a steps for Savannah. Yeah. So, anyways, on August 10th, 1964, at the age of 24, Dean was drafted into the US Army. His dad, I don't know if you remember, was drafted into the US Air Force. So, anyways, he was assigned to Fort Polk in Louisiana, where he did his basic training. He was then transferred to Fort Benning in Georgia, where he trained as a radio repairman before he was, like, permanently assigned to Fort Hood in Texas. So he was back in Texas. His family was still, you know, in Houston. So he was closer to them. According to like official military records, his record in the military was like unblemished. Like, he had no issues according to their records. But he apparently hated it. He hated serving for the military. He was looking for an out, basically. And he told, you know, the people higher up above him that he needed to go home because his family needed him to help run the family business, which is obviously a massive lie. And he applied for a hardship discharge. So you know, back then, I presume the war was going on or whatever, that people were drafted. Well, it wasn't the war at that time, was there?
No, but the Vietnam War was. What did you say, 60-odd?
64, yeah.
Oh, no, Vietnam was later.
I don't know. Anyways, he was 1964, he was drafted into the US Army. So, drafted means that you're forced to join, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyways, he was forced to join the Army, and he hated it, so he applied for a hardship discharge, so that basically that if you had something going on at home, that you wouldn't have to go, basically. So he got sent home and was given an honourable discharge on June 11th, 1965, after only 10 months of service. And probably half that was him training. But anyways, you won't say anything about that.
Yeah, it was Vietnam in 1964.
Perfect, okay.
Was it?
Yeah, I just looked it up.
Perfect.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Pity he didn't get deployed to Vietnam and didn't come home. He said that, not me.
So anyways, while he was in the Army, he told some of his closer friends that while he was in the Army, that was when he realised that he was gay.
Okay.
Because obviously up until this point, it was more like, I'd say he kind of had it in his head, but he wasn't probably denying himself, pretending it wasn't real, blah, 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 you know, the usual story. And he said that while he was there, that was when he had his first, like, encounters, we'll say, with boys.
Well, I suppose it's probably an awful lot harder to deny that you're gay when you're literally surrounded by sweaty, muscly men at all times.
Yeah, and see, like, if... Isn't it a thing that if, like, in the Army, that there's a lot of, like, even straight boys that kind of...
Do stuff experiment to each other, because,
you know?
Yeah.
So he probably thought it was,
same
like...
Same when people have, like, prison wives, as in, like, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the big, bulkier men will, like, partner up with, like, smaller men and call them their prison wives.
Yeah, so I'd say he might have gotten, he possibly could have got involved in a situation like that where it was like, we'll do it as straight boys, but then he kind of realised that he was getting more out of it than a normal, but the actual straight boys, we'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't just to get his rocks off.
Yeah, he was getting more out of it. He was in, like, you know, he was gay, like, basically. Apparently when he came back, there was his other, like, acquaintances, you know, people who, he didn't really have any friends, said that his behaviour changed when he came back from his military service.
Mm-hmm.
That when he was around young, like, teenage boys, his mannerisms, his behaviour, he just changed when he was with them. Which is kind of creepy and weird, but anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And these acquaintances, he hadn't told them straight up that he was gay, but these little changes to his mannerisms led them to believe that he was gay as well. So people were kind of starting to realise that he was, basically.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing a good job hiding it, basically. So anyways, in the meantime, his mom forgave him for something that wasn't his fault, and he went back to his old job as being vice president of the Coral Candy Company. At this stage now, since Jake was still in charge of Pecan Prince and Mary was in charge of Coral Candy Company, there was like a really intense rivalry.
Right.
So Dean started working extra hours to try and compete basically with Pecan Prince, because Pecan Prince was doing better. Presumably because they were already set up and, you know, the branding was better and all this kind of shit, you know.
Yeah.
Usual.
It was well established already, like.
So things start going sideways around here, because in 1965, the Coral Candy Company relocated to 22nd Street, which was directly across the street from Helms Elementary School.
Oh.
So.
Oh, great.
Lovely. So this is where he earned the nickname of the Candyman, because he was known to give free sweets to the school children. In particular, he preferred the teenage boys, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's when people started calling him the Candyman and the Piper. Fucking creepy. But anyways.
Another suitable name would be Pedo, Pedo, Pedo.
The Pedo Piper.
Massive pedo. But anyways.
Oh, God. It's horrible knowing what's coming. Like, that's the worst part.
Yeah,
there were a small number of employees within the company, and Dean was noticed that he was being very flirty with some of the younger male employees. Like, he's very on brand. Like, none of his behavior is like he's approaching the young boys from the jump. And yeah, it's really disgusting. But anyways, like, he was born in 1939, and like, it's 1965 now. So what, he's like 25 and he's going for teenage boys. Like, it's really disgusting. And it's a whole thing of, like, I presume it's a whole power trip thing as well, because like, they're the easy targets because they're easy to manipulate. You give them fucking sweets and they're like,
even like
unreal.
The older teenage boys, not that that makes it any better.
No,
but, like,
yeah, he's
like 17, 18. It's young, like 13, 14.
Yeah. It was like preteens kind of people, like it was like 11 kind of up, you know.
Yeah.
So
easier targets.
So he started trying to attract these younger boys. So obviously the first step was the sweets, handing out free sweets. Like, he more than likely, being the vice president, was probably able to influence where they moved the company to. So that's why he might have chosen this area.
But is that not like pedo 101? Like, get a white van and give kids sweets to try lower.
He's very predictable. Like, he's not doing anything that's unusual. Like, he's very, I don't want to call him boring because he's,
well, I mean,
there's a lot of fucked up shit, but he's not like,
isn't it this guy that kind of really started that stereotype anyway?
Probably, yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. More than likely.
Yeah, I would imagine so anyway, because I don't think there was one quite like him before it, so.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone really about, like, earlier than him. But anyways, yeah. So he moved the company to across the road from an elementary school. He started giving sweets to the kids. He's hiring younger male employees. Like, he's probably the one who's doing the hiring. You know what I mean? So he's able to hire who he wants. He's hiring the younger males. Another thing that he did was, he, in the factory, there was a space at the back of, you know, the big space. And he installed a pool table that would attract the boys.
Right.
So, like, he's doing all these little things. Like, he's making their place. It's like Willy Wonka. If Willy Wonka was a perv. Probably was a perv, but. Like, make yourself appealing in a non-creepy way. Well, it is creepy. The whole thing is creepy. But, like, you know,
that it's not going to be to them at the time. It's like, oh, there's this cool dude that gives us sweets.
Attract them to you. They're coming to you. Like, he's, you know.
Yeah.
So, he installed this pool table and this attracted local young people. And it also had the younger employees staying after work to socialise.
Right.
So, 2 years after the relocation to, you know, by the elementary school, Dean met and started being friends with this 12-year-old named David Owen Brooks.
No.
So
you're that age, don't have friends
in their 30s.
That aren't even in your same decade.
Honestly.
This,
stop
like,
it.
At this stage now, he's in his late 20s. Like, I think he's maybe 25 to 27. Like, you know, I'll get into it, basically. So anyways, David was a sixth grader. So he was in, you know, sixth class. And he wore glasses. And he got to know Dean, as he was one of the kids that Dean regularly gave free sweets to.
Mm-hmm.
He socialised with Dean a lot because, you know, obviously with the sweets, and he also made use of the pool table, that he joined the group of young boys who used to go to the pool table all the time, that they'd probably go after school and on the weekends and stuff.
Yeah.
Dean used to regularly go on trips to South Texas beaches, but he used to bring groups of boys from the group. Like, he'd bring a select few from the group that would go to the pool table, and he'd bring them with him to Texas beaches.
Right.
And David started going with them. I mentioned the glasses, by the way, because David was very conscious of his appearance, and he said that Dean was the first adult man that didn't mock him for how he looked. It's so fucking sad.
That is really sad.
Yeah, so David ends up being a massive dickhead as well, but like, he was a victim at the same time.
Yeah, he was influenced by his surroundings.
He was a victim, but he was also, you know, whatever. I don't know what the word is. But so David was having a tough time at home. His parents were having trouble and they had money problems and stuff like this. So Dean would often just give him money. Not even loan him, he would just give it to him. So, you know, this kind of father-son relationship started building, that David started seeing Dean as like a father figure.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really disgruming. Like,
yep. That is so sad.
Yeah, he started seeing him as a role model and he became one of Dean's favourites, basically, that they were. Anyways, so while this was going on, Mary and Joyce moved to Colorado. It was 1968 and Mary wanted to get away from Houston because she'd nothing left for her in Houston, because in the meantime, while all this was going on, she had to close down the candy company because it wasn't doing well enough. And obviously, she had broken up with Jake and she wanted to get away. So when the candy company shut down, Dean obviously was out of a job. So he found a job as an electrician where he tested like switches. He kind of tested the flow of electricity for the Houston Lighting and Power Company.
Okay.
Because obviously he needed money. First of all, to pay rent and shit, but also he needed money so he could give it to the young lads. So they'd keep coming around. It's disgusting. But anyways, Mary said that she regularly spoke to Dean on the phone, but she never saw him again in person.
Oh.
Yeah, I presume he didn't want to move. Like, Texas and Colorado I'd say they're a pretty good distance away from each other. Like, so,
I think so.
You know,
I think they are.
Like, I feel like Colorado is further up the west coast. Like, it's more like Midland America, whereas Texas is obviously the furthest south.
Mm-hmm.
So Dean started kind of escalating now with David. He started slowly introducing the idea of a relationship, and after kind of a lot of urging from Dean, David consented, I say this with bunny ears, consented to a relationship. Obviously, he was fucking, what, like, probably 13 or 14 at this stage. Like, he's not consenting to anything. Like, he's a kid.
Yeah.
This all started in 1969, where Dean, taking advantage of David's lack of money and probably materialistic belongings, like, he probably didn't have anything, he started plying David with money and gifts in return for blowjobs, basically. That Dean would give David gifts if, which I thought was unusual, not that if David would give Dean a blowjob, but the, that Dean would be able to give David.
Oh!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, it was just, I was surprised by that. I was, oh, you know, you always expect it to be the other way around. But he wanted to give blowjobs rather than get blowjobs.
But if he liked, now this is going to sound disgusting and I feel actually...
You're probably right.
Vile saying it, but if he actually liked to touch little boys...
He's going to get off from...
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
David getting off.
Doing stuff to them.
Ew.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel dirty. Oh,
I know.
I'm like itchy. You know when you get like itchy when it's so gross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he started applying David. Dean started applying David with gifts and money, so he could give David blowjobs. David's parents were divorced at this stage. His father lived in Houston and his mother lived in Beaumont, which is about 2 hours drive. It's 140 kilometers, so about 2 hours drive east of Houston. So he was on his own really. Like, Dean turned 30 in December of this year, and people said that his behavior, like his personality, changed. He became like, he was like hypersensitive. He was glum, was the word used, that he was just kind of very down in himself when he turned 30. Mm-hmm. And I suppose to preserve, like, he started hanging out with more young boys and began hosting glue and paint sniffing parties in his apartment.
Don't huff paint, and please don't huff glue.
Honestly.
So this lad is 30 now, and I when I was reading this, I was like, it's definitely him kind of realizing how old he is. Not old, he's fucking 30, but that he wanted to like preserve his youth. Do you know?
That's not even, that's what I was thinking when you were saying that he kind of got sad about the fact that he was turning 30 and started getting a bit bitchy, basically, is that he knows the older he gets, the less attractive he's going to be to these young boys as well.
Be to the younger boys. It becomes, exactly. Because they're going to see them then as that creepy old
guy. Exactly. You're not the, like,
oh, this cool old
cool man that has a pool table.
Yeah.
That gives us money. No, exactly. That's what that is. You're dead right.
It's like you're the creepy old man who has a pool table. So, yeah. It said that, like, a more sadistic streak started showing through. Not to be shaming anyone, but he started, like, leaning towards more, like, bondage and stuff while he was having... while he was sleeping with people, with the young boys.
Okay.
It was not even that it was like the fact that he was tying these people up. It was more the fact that that's what was getting him, that it was like the power kind of stuff.
He had full control.
Yeah,
which, like, do you, but at the same time...
That makes sense why he'd want to do stuff to that young lad as well. Because it's the control of it, because
it's
the
more
one
about
that's
control.
Yeah.
In charge. Him.
That's like, it's the, like, that's why he's going for young boys. I don't think he obviously was a pedophile, but I don't think that's why he was attracted to the younger boys. I think it was because they were easier to manipulate.
Yeah, that's what I said. A 13-year-old is going to be an awful lot easier to manipulate and overpower than a 17-year-old when, you know, they're getting stronger and taller and all of that kind of stuff. So
can fight you off properly.
Yeah, I'm not like shaming BDSM, whatever. Like, it doesn't, but it's just he started leaning
in the context of this story. We're not talking about anyone else.
Yes, you can.
I know, but I just wanted to say that I just mean is he's kind of leaning into that kind of a thing, and he started getting more sadistic about it. So in 1970, when David was 15, he dropped out of high school and moved to live with his mother in Beaumont. He regularly used to visit his dad because his dad obviously lived in Houston. So when he was in Houston, he'd call into Dean to say hello, kind of thing. And Dean, being so generous, used to let him sleep in his apartment whenever he wanted, you know.
Oh, so nice of him. So generous. What a friendly guy.
Anyways, David ended up, after he was living with his mom for a while, he decided he wanted to move back to Houston, that he just wasn't. I don't know if he didn't enjoy it, but there was a reason too that he didn't want to live in Beaumont anymore, whether it was that he didn't have friends or whatever, but he moved back to Houston and to live with his dad, but he started treating Dean's apartment as a second home. So he was there at least half of his time. He was with Dean at Dean's apartment. So Dean starts escalating now. Between 1970 and 1973, Dean is known to have killed a minimum of 28 victims. All of his victims were males aged 13 to 20, the majority of who were in their mid-teens. He found most of his victims in Houston Heights, which at the time was a low-income area, where the candy company had been set up. So he was obviously familiar with the area. He knew whatever.
Yeah.
So
it was an easy hunting ground for him.
Exactly. Like, he knew
especially
the ins and outs.
You said before, it was in a poorer area.
Yeah. It's always easier.
He's going to give a shit about poor kids that go missing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They care. People care less, as sad as that is. Well, not even people. The fucking police care less. As well, police in a low-income area, crime tends to be higher. Crime rates tend to be higher, so
yeah.
They probably had a lot of other things to be dealing with, not just...
And runaways were rampant in the 60s, so...
I was just going to say, they would have chopped it down to
most
runaways.
Most of them were.
Yeah. Or he's gone hitchhiking.
Yeah.
The first... I'm going to cover, like, the first five confirmed, but there's two extra that are unconfirmed, but...
most likely.
Yeah, he did, basically.
Yeah.
So his first victim was an 18-year-old college freshman named Jeffrey Conan. And Jeffrey went missing on September 25th in 1970. He was a student in the University of Texas and he was hitchhiking home to his parents' house in Houston. He was with another student, but along the way they got separated because obviously I'm presuming their destinations were different, so they were getting different lifts.
Mm.
Jeffrey actually got to Houston, but just before he got home, Dean picked him up. He got as far as the uptown area of Houston at the corner of Westheimer Road and South Voss Road. And they know this because obviously the guy, I'm presuming whoever had dropped him there, said that this was the last confirmed sighting of him, basically. And
yeah.
Yeah. And that's where it's presumed that Dean found him. Because at the time of Jeffrey's disappearance, Dean lived in an apartment close by an intersection with Westheimer Street. So the street he lived on intersected with Westheimer Street as well. So he probably wasn't very far from where, like, you know, he found Jeffrey. He owned two cars at this time, and he owned a Ford Econoline van and a Plymouth GTX. And later on in 1971, he bought a Chevrolet Corvette off David, and he used to use this car to, you know, I presume he'd pull up and he'd be like, "Do you want a lift?" And then he wouldn't drop them where they needed to go, basically.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's family reported him missing when he obviously didn't get home, but the police did nothing. They said that he was a college kid and he probably just headed up the West Coast up to California on a whim. Apparently that was a common thing to do.
That shit makes me so mad. Like, you're going to fuck over, like, states over on a whim and not tell one of your friends, any member of your family. You're just going to...
They knew he was hitchhiking home, you know, because there was a kid who'd been hitchhiking with him. Do you know?
Yeah. And to just assume that he's like, oh, he's gone to California on a whim. Like, not even, oh, he might just be at
why
a friend's
California?
House. You know what I mean?
Apparently it was like common for kids in the University of Texas to, that's where they'd, I don't know if that was where they do their spring break or whatever, but that they'd travel up the West Coast up to California because it was, I'm presuming it was kind of close. I don't know, it didn't really make
fair
sense
enough,
to me because
even just to assume that everyone is going to be the same, like, it only takes that one person that clearly it has happened
clearly
to that it was something sinister and not mm-hmm. they're going to get a suntan and drink loads, like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not everyone is a sesh moth.
Yeah. So Jeffrey went missing and nobody knew where he was. It wasn't until years later, on August 10th in 1973, that David led police to the site of Jeffrey, where Jeffrey's body was buried. It had been buried on High Island Beach. It was under a large boulder, covered with a layer of lime, wrapped in plastic. He was naked and he was bound hand and foot.
So, like, hand and foot, does that mean, like, hogtied?
I didn't specify, but when I thought about it, I just thought it was that he would, like, as if he had handcuffs on both, rather than that his hands and feet were attached to each other.
Oh, okay.
So that he couldn't move his hands or his feet, but he could move them independently. Yeah.
Right, okay.
He might have been hogtied, but that's the way I understood it. Forensic scientists obviously got involved, and when they examined the body, they said that he had died of asphyxiation caused by manual strangulation, and also that his breathing had been compromised because there was a cloth gag had been put in his mouth and left there.
Right.
So, you know, that he'd been strangled, basically, but that also, even if he hadn't been, he probably would have suffocated because of the cloth gag that was left in his mouth.
He probably used the gag to muffle him.
Yeah.
Because of the way that he was found naked and obviously tied up, they presumed that he'd also been raped as well. It had been 3 years, so I'm presuming that it, like, you couldn't really tell after
any
that stage.
DNA evidence or... Yeah.
Well, the lime as well, isn't that... that's something that helps bodies decompose faster. So, yeah. And if he was on a beach, like with the high tide.
It takes away the smell as well.
Yeah.
And the tide, I'm presuming the tide was coming in and out. Like, it was just a whole load of things that just, they couldn't say for definite, but as
Most likely he did it to everyone else.
If that would have been like a sex act gone wrong, you're not going to go to that extension to like make sure the body dissolves or as quickly as it can.
He did, basically, but they just can't say conclusively that he did.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's what I mean, but like,
it wasn't just that they were having kinky sex and he died during it. It's
exactly he
killed him.
Yeah.
At the time of Jeffrey's murder, around the same time, so you know, kind of late 1970, Dean is confirmed, well not confirmed, but he's said to have sexually assaulted two young boys as well. Okay. David walked in on Dean with these two young boys that Dean had strapped them down, both down to a four-poster bed, and David walked in and caught him in the act. Dean tried to buy off David. He said that he'd buy him a car if he kept quiet, and David accepted. So Dean bought him a green Corvette. This is David now becoming an asshole because, you know, he's now involved in this whole thing, that he's gone from being a victim to being an accomplice, basically.
Yeah.
Dean, these are the two now that aren't confirmed because there's no proof. David says that Dean told him that he killed them. These two boys.
Right, so he walked in, saw him, like, sexually assaulting them, and he was like, if you keep your mouth shut, I'll buy you a car. And then what, David just left, so he didn't know what actually
David
happened
at the start. David at the time presumed that Dean let them go, but Dean told him later on that he'd actually killed them. So there's no proof, there's no nothing, but it's just...
So they never found bodies, or they don't even know who these two poor bastards actually were.
He might have put them anywhere, like, there was... Yeah, you know.
He did,
we can't say that he did because
he wasn't going to let them go. You can't let go of somebody that you've tied down and raped because
you can't
going to talk.
Especially because you know where they are, because he led them there.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Dean told David that he'd kill them, and that was, I don't want to say that was fine, but you know, that's kind of the end of their part. Dean told David that for every little boy that David brought to Dean's house, he would give David $200. So he said, for every boy that you lead to my apartment, I'll give you $200 and I'll do what I want, basically. And David said, sounds good. So on December 13th, 1970,
a minimum wage job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just fucking a suggestion.
So Jeffrey was killed at the end of September. Around the same time, David walked in on Dean with these two young boys and he apparently killed them. So it's around the end of September, start of October, that Dean made David this offer. And...
Right.
What is it, fucking 3 months later? Not even? 2 months? December 13th? David took Dean up on his offer and he lured two 14-year-old boys to Dean. These boys, they were from a district of Houston named Spring Branch. And they were called James Glass and Danny Yates. He lured them to Dean's apartment all the way from Houston Heights because that's where he met them. He knew them. They had been at a religious rally.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know why that makes it more sad, but it kind of I don't know.
Because it's like these really heavily religious people, you know, doing their thing. And then what happened to them was godless.
Yeah. So James knew David and had actually been at Dean's apartment before with David in the past.
So he wasn't going to think much of
it. He didn't think anything of it. You're like, you wouldn't, like...
Yeah.
Do you know? That's like me going to a house. You go to a house with your friend and you've been to this house before with this friend.
You trust the friend. Yeah. You're not going to think there's anything sinister in it. You're going to go to, like, some older fella's apartment, probably huff paint, huff glue, have a couple of drinks, so you think you're in for a great
outing. So that's what Dean used to do as well. It was that he would feed them drink. He would, you know, have them huffing shit until... They were basically like unable to defend themselves.
Yeah.
So anyways, the two boys, James and Danny, arrived at Dean's apartment and obviously were tied down to opposite ends of Dean's makeshift torture board. He had this like plywood board, like it was like the size of a table, and he had these kind of ropes attached to it that he'd used to kind of tie people up. So he tied James and Danny like head to toe on this board where he tortured them, raped them and strangled them. He had a few different ways of torturing his victims. He's so gross, man. He would use pliers to pluck pubic hairs one by one.
Oh, what?
Yeah, so I swear to God, it's so bad. Like,
I know this is kind of the wrong part to focus on, but why a pliers?
Pliers, I literally thought the same thing.
I was like, when you were like, oh, he used the pliers to pluck, and I was like, nails, fingernails or toenails. That's nails. What I assumed.
But ew, oh my God. Her. Yeah, well, should that fucking, that'd hurt like so bad. And he probably didn't want to buy tweezers because he was pretending he wasn't gay. And I suppose tweezers back then, if your man bought tweezers, it was like a feminist kind of thing. He gets very grim, so I just want to give like a kind of trigger warning, basically, because it's pretty bad. He would buy these glass rods, these kind of long, skinny glass rods, and he would put them into the urethra, basically, of these boys' penises, and then hit their dicks with hammers. So like, I'm trying to say this in a nice way, but it's just so hard to say it. Like,
you can't say anything like that in a nice way. I won't even try because.
What do you even say? Like,
there's no way.
So he would obviously.
All we can do is give the information.
Yeah,
it's kind of strange that he would like destroy their genitals. It's to me, it's kind of like he's trying to destroy the thing that made him. Yeah.
It's the same way with those men who have mommy issues who kill all these women. It's nearly a subconscious thing where he's trying to destroy the source of all his problems.
It makes sense in his head, like the relevance. Well, okay, well, if I destroy this,
it could be like almost like he's trying to cure himself. Yeah,
or like it's like he's you know, it's like he's removing temptation by destroying the thing that is tempting him.
Yeah, exactly. What I was thinking.
It's all symbolism.
Like. Yeah,
yeah.
So he obviously would rape them, like. With himself, but he used to also use like dildos. Sometimes.
Wait, sorry. It was gay to buy a tweezers, but this motherfucker could buy dildos.
Okay, the gay thing about the tweezers was an assumption.
I'm like.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe. See, the thing is that they could have been. He might have made them himself. Like, it could have been one of those, like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, God. I didn't even think of it like that, but yeah, it could have been, you know. It could have been a homemade one. Or maybe, stop.
It's probably wood. And I'm just...
So, these kind of get worse because he sometimes would turn up the volume on his radio and chew on their genitals.
All right, Elizabeth Bathory.
Stop, it's actually like... my brain hurts. Also, some of the boys, when they were found, had been castrated and had the parts that had been removed... placed in plastic bags and buried with them. So sometimes it was just like the balls, but sometimes it was like the whole thing.
Package.
Emasculated is the word. The technical term. So he obviously, being a very stereotypical fucking psychopath, he enjoyed like remembering his victims. So he used to keep like mementos. Like he used to
trophies
is the word. Sometimes he'd take photographs. But a lot of the time he liked keeping their keys. I don't know why. I suppose it's the whole kind of thing of like, I could get into your house if I wanted to kind of, I think it's another power play thing.
That's what I like, similar is what I would think of that is, it's like, I'm keeping the way to get into the home that you're never going to get to return to.
Yeah. It's like, you couldn't go back if I left you alive kind of thing. So, these two boys, Danny and James, their bodies were taken to High Island as well, which was about 130 kilometres away from Dean's apartment. So a good, like a decent 2-hour drive. Like, he had a boat shed on this High Island beach that he'd started renting on November 17th of that year. So he'd only had it like not even a month. Mm-hmm. But he obviously got it for a reason that he was like, I'm going to...
It served that purpose.
Yeah.
So he brought them to the boat shed and it had the ground underneath it was soil. So he'd dig up the soil and bury them underground in the shed.
Right.
You know where to bury bodies when you live in an apartment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy or James, his family called him Jimmy. He was labelled a runaway, like, immediately. The police, the second his family said that he was missing, they said... He ran away because apparently he used to, not regularly, but sometimes he'd leave his home house and go stay with his friends because him and his dad used to argue. And one of the arguments that like they used to have like very often was that Jimmy kept his hair at a certain length and his dad didn't like it. which was like apparently a very common argument. I know, it's so funny and cute.
Cut your hair, you hippie.
Yeah, that he, you know, young lads at the time were keeping their hair long, and the dads who were like all in the army and shit were like, cut your fucking hair.
Yeah, absolutely hated it. You know, of course.
You know, it's mm-hmm. typical, like,
you have to have that military buzz cut.
Do you need me to patch up the holes in your jeans? Like, the whole thing of, like, the younger generation mm-hmm. having a sense of style that the older generation don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm presuming the police knew this, either because the family had told the police that he used to run away sometimes. I think that's something that they asked, has he ever run away? So they just said, no, he's just ran away, he's fine. Danny was apparently, in the past, he'd seen, been seen one time at a home that runaways used to go to.
Right.
In the area. That runaways used to go to this house. And a home, I don't know, it said home, so it's either between, like, it's either house or like a destination, but he wasn't looked for either. So both of them were just, they're just, they're gone off together, they're friends, they've run away together, they're fine, basically.
Right.
Danny had actually had a girlfriend at the time. It made me so sad.
Aww.
She said that he had curly brown hair, blue eyes, and peach fuzz. To this day, despite being married and, like, having a teenage son, she still keeps a picture of him, like, with her.
Oh.
Stop, I know, it breaks my heart.
That's horrific, stuff. Oh my god.
Danny's older sister said their father began to fall apart under the stress of feeling like it was his fault that Danny had run away because he had been too tough on him.
Yeah, of course you're going to blame yourself. Like, you know you've been giving him a bit of shit, and it's like, oh, what if I said too much or pushed him too far and now he's never going to come home, like...
Or, like, if I would have, even if they were to have that argument, if it was to happen the following day, the chances of him crossing Dean's path might have changed and he might have been alive then.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, Danny's dad was struggling, and at one point, he actually drove 500 miles to Mexico. It was 500 miles one way because someone had said they'd seen someone who looked like Danny.
Jesus.
Oh, James, or Jimmy, his family, like, really struggled as well. His mam, when they'd be driving along, his brother said that his mam would often see hitchhikers on the side of the road, and she'd make her husband, so Jimmy's dad, turn around and go back and make sure that it wasn't.
That it wasn't him.
Yeah.
She's constantly going to be looking for him.
Yeah.
And, like, everything you see, like, someone that's his, like, same height as him, has the same hair.
And, yeah, anyone that was, like, a teenage boy with brown hair, that she was like, it's him, we need to go back and check. And, like, obviously it was never him. She ended up actually having a psychotic break where she, not, I don't want to say she took her daughter hostage, but she kind of, she took her daughter into a room and was like threatening to kill anyone who came in, kind of thing, because she said that she couldn't deal with someone taking her daughter from her the way that they'd taken Jimmy.
Jesus.
Oh God.
So she ended up having to be put into a psychiatric unit because the police obviously were called because she was a danger to everyone, basically. And she apparently was never the same after it, obviously.
As you wouldn't be, like, yeah, of course.
No, that amount of pain, you couldn't be.
They'd nearly have been better off if they...
unexplained for so long.
Exactly, they might have even been better off to know what happened to him, because then at least you have your answer. You're not like, where is he, what did I do, why hasn't he come home?
Yeah.
You know? But he's missing.
Like, as much as it's not going to heal your fucking heart to know that your son was murdered, at least you have closure, and you can try to move on from that.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy's brother, Willie, said, he's quoted in saying, Dean Carl didn't just kill 27 boys, he killed 27 families. Because obviously, you know, he's seen his mam.
Oh.
You know, it fucked up everyone, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Barely 6 weeks, 6 weeks after he killed Jimmy and Danny, Dean and David came across two more teenage brothers. They were two teenage boys, but they were brothers as well. So on January 30th, 1972... Donald and Jerry Waldrop were walking home to their parents' house when they were taken. They were picked up. Their dad had dropped them over to their friend's house because they wanted to set up like a bowling league. You know, they wanted to set up bowling teams so they could have a league. So their dad dropped them over to the house, but when they got there, the friend wasn't home. But by the time, obviously, you know, someone came to the door and said, oh, he's not here. Their dad had already left, so they had to walk home. And that's when they were picked up. That Dean was driving a van, and they were enticed into the van, either under, you know, the offer of giving them a lift, or that there was a party that they could go to. But either way, they were enticed into the van, and from there, they were brought to Dean's apartment. He started to rent a new apartment on Magnum Road, and that's where they were when they were raped, tortured, beaten, and then buried in the same boat shed on High Island.
Because they're probably going to think, like, oh, because there's two of them, you know, you're not going to question that anything's going to happen.
Yeah, well, see, David was still young at this stage. Together. David would have been their age. Do you know? Give or take. So, it's another young lad. Like, you're not going to... And as well, two young lads together aren't going to be fearful of kidnapping. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd always think that, like, there's at least safety in numbers. No one's going to kidnap two of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But obviously not in this case.
Yeah.
Because even from the start, I have been thinking how unusual it is that it seems to always be in pairs. Why is it always pairs that he takes them in?
They're obviously more confident.
The two young boys he took first. Then he got David to take two more young boys together. And now these two together as well.
Mm-hmm.
Their guards are going to be completely dropped.
Yeah.
So if you're by yourself, you're going to be a little bit
You're going
wary.
To be a lot more wary, like, but if you're by yourself.
You have a friend with you and everything.
Yeah. You're gonna feel safe.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the end of my notes. Savannah will be picking up from here.
Yeah, I get to go into what, like, fucking 15 more.
Yeah.
Or at least 10, anyway.
I found most of my details on Wikipedia, murderpedia.org. And Savannah, what was the book called? I forgot to ask you.
Oh, dear God.
You'll tell us next week or whatever, it's fine.
Dean Corll, The Candyman Killer. But yeah, I'll give the name of the book and the author and everything next week.
Yeah. Ending on a high.
Yeah.
I feel so dirty. Like, I feel like I need to go take the hottest shower of my life.
This is the first time that I think the three of us have sat here at the end of recording an episode and we're just looking at each other like... What do we say? Because we're not done. We can't even be like, well, he was a sick fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why this case is just, like, really getting in my brain. But I'm like, even the whole, like, Sylvia Likens was
I really wanted to cover it awful, because but it's... it messed me up for ages. Mm. And not that I feel like, oh, well, let's set out to traumatise the masses. Because obviously not. But it's still a story worth being told. And especially, there's all so much fixation about the people that do it and then never about the poor people that it's after happening to.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, it's like, we've all heard of the Candyman. We've all seen, you know, the movies based on him. We've all known about the white van pedo that's going to come and be like, hey, little kid, you want some sweets? Get in the back of my van. But nobody really talks about this. No one talks about what I assume, I will look into it if it actually is. But I do assume that the whole thing with the pedo and the white van with the fucking candy... came from him.
Yeah, probably came from that.
So, you know, we kind of owe it to the people that were killed to talk about the real story and not just this sensationalised version that's in the media that we've all grown up knowing and kind of fearing, but not knowing why we really should fear it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so for obvious reasons, don't go to any stranger's house. Don't get into a van with somebody. Don't huff paint. If you're somewhere unfamiliar, just don't take any form of drugs.
See, that's
or drink
the scary thing, because
don't get out of your mind.
Exactly.
Some of them had been there before, and some of them were friends with David. Some of them knew him. Like, that's the thing. None of them felt like they didn't know these people.
Yeah, that's the
no. But even like, I'd never go to the house of a lonely man that's in his mid-30s, and you are 12.
Yeah.
Not that any kids are going to be listening to this, but like,
talk to your kids, whoever's listening,
kids. Or your siblings, let them know that that's maybe not a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just because one friend doesn't mean that you have to do it as well.
Exactly. Maybe as bad as it sounds, maybe, you know, let them go and you stay home and see how the outcome is. Because, like, it's just not worth it. It's not worth taking a chance just because you're bored and you want to do something. Like, you might never come home. So... yeah, that was a fun episode.
On a lighter note, not to be wishing death on anyone, but as of June this year, David died of coronavirus. So,
I mean,
I'm not to be wishing death on anyone, but, you know,
you can't wish death on them when they're already dead.
Exactly.
Just saying.
No, I know, but not to be like, you know.
I mean, he can't die twice. So,
like, if anyone, like, if anyone deserves, I don't know, if he deserved worse, but if anyone...
I mean, look, I know he was fucking manipulated. I know he came from, like, a poor shit family, and...
he was still a victim, but he, instead of being a victim, he victimised other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went from being a victim to being an accomplice, and it's...
And there's it was all for a profitable gain. Because if he was getting $200, so if you think of $200 back in the 60s, like the inflation and how much money that would actually be.
$200 that's true, actually. In the 60s is a lot. But, I mean, like, if he had just, you know, not been a selfish bastard, then victims number 2 and 3 could have lived, first of all. And that's where it would have stopped. It would have stopped... What, say even if they had died, so 3 victims, it would have stopped 26 other people being murdered if he had just opened his fucking mouth back then in 1970. So, yeah.
Like, there's never always going to be a cushy life when you're hanging with people that are literally like murderers and rapists.
Exactly.
Just because you're getting money at the time, that's not going to last.
It's $1,500 approx. But there's also
per person
speculation that the money thing is bullshit. That David used it as a way of kind of lessening his sentence, that
to justify what he did.
There's no proof that
he was as much involved.
There's no proof that Dean ever gave him money.
I think the money makes it worse.
I do too, but
because it's like, how can you say like a person's life is worth you getting that amount of money? But so if he was just gone on pure manipulation alone and wasn't getting anything from it, I feel like that's more forgiving, because you're like, okay, he's totally brain dead, but the fact that he was getting given stuff for it,
no, because
he's going to keep on doing it so he can keep on getting stuff.
He was able to use the whole, like, I'm poor, like, I'm having massive money troubles, like, I didn't want to do it, but I needed to do it to keep myself alive because I needed the money to survive. Whereas if he did it,
sure,
if he did it,
in his area would have been the
but
same.
If he did it off his own back, so they'd be able to say that
against the masses,
he enjoyed it. I know what you mean.
Well, it obviously worked, because he did. No. Did anything happen to him? We'll find out. We'll find out when we get
I have a point is all I'm going to say. We can cut this a bit out, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll get to that. Not the next episode, but in Lizzie's episode. So that's, God, we have a couple of weeks before that, because we cannot do this every week. We won't be continuing with my section of the story until 2 weeks time. So we've got another nice lighthearted little episode next week.
One that we actually can laugh at.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have a little bit of fun in between, because, you know, this is heavy for you guys to listen to and it's heavy for us to talk about. So we like to break it up with something that's, you know, brain bleach. We live the brain bleach.
I can fucking feel him in my brain. Yeah. It's like worms in my brain.
I literally, the whole time, the entire time that you've been talking about him, just that picture of him kind of looking to the side.
The no eyebrows. Yeah, that face.
It's ingrained in my brain. It is like, ugh.
And the completely soulless eyes. Yeah. Like, they're...
Which is...
There's nothing in behind them.
Obviously, the picture I have to use when we put this up on our Insta. So, I'm sorry to all of our listeners that's going to be ingrained in your brain too.
Because it's so disgusting.
And your nightmares.
And your nightmares, for sure.
And if you're very unlucky, that would be your sleep paralysis demon.
Oh, God. Oh, stop.
Like, ugh. A tiny bit of ABH brow gel would have.
I mean, honestly.
Probably just... That's probably what his problem was.
No.
Trying to pluck his eyebrows and he pulled out 800 hairs by accident because he was using pliers instead. Because it's gay to own tweezers.
I was going
to
say, do you reckon he plucked his eyebrows with those tweezers?
The pliers. Oh, God.
So, yeah. Thanks for listening. I love brightening up everybody's day.
Yeah, you know, we might just, maybe when it comes my turn, because all we're going to be talking about is victim after victim after victim, maybe we'll just find like nice little fun facts to put in between for when it gets too heavy. And you guys can just kind of shout out and, you know, be like, okay, fun fact time. So that we can lighten it up a little bit, because...
Yeah.
I mean, we could make a joke or two for this one, for his early life, but there's no jokes. There's no jokes coming for episode 2 of this, so. Or part 2, even. Will it be episode 13? Jesus.
I can't count, to be honest, so don't even ask me.
I think
and as of this morning, we're not nearly on 200 listeners, is it?
Really? I only checked, like,
nearly the 200. Day
before. No, when I checked when I uploaded, and it was, like, 175. Holy shit, we're flying.
We're gone up to like 180 something, I think. So I'd say by the time this one comes out,
we'll be up to 200 listeners. So in that case, shout out to all 200 of you guys that actually like to listen to us. We're not sure why, but we appreciate it.
It's me.
And I made 800. Keep coming back.
I made lots of new emails.
You what?
No, I don't know what I'm talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like, right, you need to go watch something that's
I'm
gonna
go watch like My Little Pony or something. I don't know why it's like in my brain so bad. I usually don't get it's like this.
Because it's a horrible topic. That's why. And you've just had to talk about it.
I could see it defeating you as you were talking about it. Like, that's how bad it was. So, go watch Gravity Falls.
No, I'm going to watch My Little Pony.
Let's, okay, Cuiva's becoming a brony. We're going to have an intervention in a couple of weeks. But
it's actually a good show.
That's what they say, Cuiva.
Yeah, but I'm not being like, oh my god, like, Applejack is so sexy. Like, I'm just like, it's a good show.
Well, I mean, somebody please cut that section out and then isolate it and have Cuiva just say,
Applejack is so sexy.
So then, no.
And that will be played during your intervention.
Yep, exactly.
Stop.
We'll use it to bait you.
At the end of the episode, it's just going to be me like, Cuiva's a brody and then Applejack is so sexy.
I've been watching the Smurfs lately too.
I hate them. I fucking hate the Smurfs. They do my head in. Yeah.
They're so shit.
Oh, fuck the booty.
The way they speak, the way they fucking, just the whole thing about it, I'm like, just get out of my fucking life.
No, their little theme song is so good as well.
And then that pervy creep that does hide in the woods and tries to
honestly
kill them. Because he wants him for his little...
Well, Gargamel can gargle some bleach and get out of my fucking face.
Yeah, he should. He's not a nice guy.
Honest to God.
Be like,
I feel
it's
Send help.
This is like the third time you've burst into song during this episode. I think we got to wrap it up now at this point. This has dragged on for too long. So.
Exactly. We need to end this, fuck's sake.
But yes, thanks to everyone for listening to me talking about awful things.
Yes. We'll be back again in 2 weeks for more awful things. Stick with us in between for the fun stuff. Other than that, yeah, I've got nothing else to say. Just always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our cult. I'm not one that huffs paint.